Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
It's often in the world we now live in that people are lost for words and that language itself cannot cope with the extent of tragedies. I'm joined now by Dr. Ali Al-Najjar, a member of the Sligo medical community, who has been deeply personally affected by the ongoing conflict. Last Friday, an Israeli airstrike hit the home of his sister, Dr. Ala Al-Najjar, a paediatrician, and her husband, Han, in Gaza. 9 of their 10 children were killed. Only one child, Adam, and their father, Khan, and their mother survived. The devastating loss has resonated worldwide, even in the category of horrors that we've seen since October 7, 2023, and indeed before. Dr. Ali joins me now. Dr. Najjar, I'm lost for words, so I'll just put questions to you, and I hope none of them are I stumble over them, because the situation is just so awful. First of all, condolences to you and your family. God rest.
Thank you very much, Joe, for having me with you today and give me the opportunity just to shed light on the tragic event that happened. I only hope that this will be the last sad story that we will hear.
And I
really appreciate you having me on the air with you today. It's a pleasure.
And I would appreciate if you
Thank you very much for your condolences. Yeah. I really appreciate your kind words, your support, and everybody that have been contacting me from Sligo, from everywhere, my colleagues, my friends. I'm really speechless. The amount of support that I have felt the last couple of days is like I've never felt before. You don't know
where to start from and where to go. I mean, every day since this crazy war have started, my heart has been probably displaced from where it used to be. I mean, you are always connected to the media and watching the news every minute, just hoping that you won't be reading about one of your relatives. Like, I mean, every life that has been lost is related to me. We are all human beings at the end. I named my son Adam because we all belong to the same man. That's my message. Well, that was my message from naming Adam as Adam, because we are all the same. We are all human beings at the end of the days. And the lives of those 9 children is not more precious than anyone else that has been lost during this madness. All of those 50,000+ lives that have been lost, they all deserve shedding light on them. We are not different than them. I mean, as I said earlier, just the experience of continuously looking at the screen to read about what's going on, because you are always afraid that this moment might come. And unfortunately, on Friday, I read about the loss of my nephews and nieces, mostly from the media. I came across the news between the family group that we have on WhatsApp, and you marry that with what you can read. I became like a mad person just trying to look for any information that I can come across from the Telegram news channels that I regularly follow. I mean the channel of, let's say, Khan Yunis, the city of where Ala has been targeted. It's in the southern part of Gaza Strip. So I follow those different channels, and unfortunately I did have news about what's going on actually before that event happened. I don't know if you want us to start from how did I came across?
You know what I'd like to do, just because of what you said has prompted me, Dr. Ali, is to name the 9, your 9 nephews and nieces, and to think of them. I want our listeners to think of them, and I want to add a few words. So would you be kind enough to call out their names, please?
Yeah, there were. Yahya is the oldest. I'll start from the oldest to the youngest.
Okay.
So Yahya, which is the equivalent Arab name of John. So Yahya, Adam is the second one.
Okay.
Rakan, Eve, Jubran, Raslan, Rival, Sadin, Luqman, and the last, and lastly, the twins, Sidra and Sidar.
Yeah.
So they are 11 in total. One of them was lost 3 months ago. She was 3 months old at that time. They were twin. So the last two names I mentioned, they were twin, born on the 14th of October, 24. Okay. So one of them died 3 months after she was born due to infection and lack of medicine have contributed to the loss. The remaining twin, unfortunately, is one of the two bodies that so far their bodies are still under the rubble.
And before this indescribable tragedy, Dr. Ali, had your sister Ala spoken to you about her fears for the safety of herself and her family?
Of course, yeah. Every now and then, whenever we have the chance to talk, of course, with all difficulties and getting through communication, I mean, lots of difficulties. I don't want to expand more about lack of electricity, lack of internet, and how do we hear about them. It's a story by itself. But the last time we spoke before this tragedy happened, 3 weeks ago, when one of my sisters lives in Vancouver, yes? She was visiting me in Sligo. I remember both of us were driving the car. We were parking the car in the parking area of Nukunaria Forest Walk.
Okay.
So we were parking there on the Bluetooth of the car. We were both listening to Ala while she was talking to both of us. And she was describing how life is like while she walks among the rubbles. And she usually walks while her eyes are staring at the sky. Because every building she looks at carries out its own special memory. And all that you'll be looking at is rubble, dismantled, destroyed houses, buildings, where you have memory about with every single thing that you see around you, and the reality now has been completely dismantled. So for her, I remember specifically she said, I don't know what life is about at your side, but we believe that we are already experiencing what doomsday is. So every moment she tells me, when I meet or greet anyone in the street, we'll be always saying farewell, goodbye. We never know when we are going to meet again, because everybody is expecting his moment at any time.
Yeah.
You know, they're just on the waiting list, kind of, you know. So when she talks, I talked to her about how can you reassure your kids, and how are they coping with the situation? And she says, of course, it's the hardest job for me to do now, is how to keep them reassured. Kids are resilient. I mean, you can't comprehend. I mean, I can hardly understand how can they are more resilient than ourselves, by the way, but of course they are affected the most by the tragedy, hearing the bombs. How can they sleep at night with all the air striking, which is usually intensified during the nighttime?
Mm-hmm.
And so my daughter keeps telling them, well, whatever happened is meant to happen. She's strong. She's strengthening their belief in faith.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened, if we are gone, we are gone to heaven. We belong to God. The injustice that we are seeing is not because of anything that we have done. And whatever happened, we have to stay positive. You know, she keeps encouraging them. You know, Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, this is what we were talking about 3 weeks ago. And unfortunately, on Friday, I read about her in the social media. And I was trying to reach to her like crazy, sending messages through WhatsApp, different numbers and different relatives around her, anyone I could get hold on to, and whatever source of news I can find in order to see them, to hear their voices. I hear Alaa's voice for the first time from that, after that call, is during the time I was next to my brother. By the way, I'm in Saudi Arabia now, with my brother and my in-laws family. Where I traveled here to Saudi Arabia on, I arrived on Thursday, and next day the tragedy happened. Yeah. So I was sitting next to my brother, and he was watching a video. I heard the voice. I recognized Alaa's voice in that video. So I jumped in immediately and looked at the horrible picture of charred bodies being pulled out from the rubble. And those were her kids. That was the video that was filmed by the civil defense, where I can see Ali Yahya, the brother of Hamdi, is talking to Alaa and telling her, go back, go back. And she saw the body of one of her kids, and I heard her voice saying, Hayati, which means my darling, my love, you know. Her voice appeared in that video a couple of times.
And on the day, Dr. Al, Hamdi drove Alaa to the hospital.
That's right. Yeah. So he drove her every day.
Yeah.
And she works 2 to 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And he drives her there whenever she has to attend for her duty.
Yeah.
And he goes back to his kids in their home. So he drove her first thing he drove her there in the morning, and as soon as he arrived back home, they were down in the basement of the multi-story building. Yeah. Their apartment is in the fourth level, right?
Okay.
But because they were anticipating anything that might happen, if we need to evacuate, let's be close to the ground floor, or the basement is probably safer, right? The basement is where Hamdi has his polyclinic medical center.
Okay.
You know, Hamdi himself is a doctor. Alaa is a doctor. They have a pharmacy as well, and a small laboratory that can run some simple point of care tests like CBC, full blood count, kidney function, that kind of stuff. Anyhow, so they were in the basement where the polyclinic is, and the first missile that hit didn't explode. So my cousin Hamad Faiz told us the story that they had the chance to go to the pharmacy, which is in the ground floor, and then unfortunately, the second missile hit. Ali Yahya, who's Hamdi's older brother, was one of the first responders who arrived at the scene and found Hamdi's body on one side of the street and Adam on the other side. And they were looking under the rubble of the house. And at the same time, it seems that a fire has started to become out of control in the next building. And when the civil defense started to work on the fire and letting it down, they noticed a couple of bodies, and then this is where they found them.
And Alaa, she is still in the hospital as a patient, not as a pediatrician that she is.
She's with her son Adam and her husband Hamdi, since they managed to get Hamdi back to the hospital, and Adam was the first one that arrived to the hospital, and Adam was the first video I saw of the family. I was able to recognize my cousin and coming out of the car, so I knew that this is true, this is him, because him being covered with with the ash, you can't really recognize the details of his face appropriately, but I could tell that this is Adam. I thought that this is most likely going to be Adam, because I saw few features in his face looking similar. So then I saw my cousin next to him, and then I knew that this is him. And then, so yeah, Adam was the first to arrive, and then with the help of civil defense, they managed to get Hamdi back to the hospital. So since they were both taken to the hospital, Alaa has been with them all the time.
Yeah.
She has no home to return back to. The four-story building is leveled to the floor now. And I have another sister who is still in Gaza Strip, and she visits her. And I don't know if Alaa is probably going to be with my sister, most likely. But she's now in the same... she's sleeping in the hospital where, when she is on call, she will usually use one of the rooms to sleep, to take rest. And this is where she is now living at the moment, let's say.
And what's communication been like in the last week, Dr. Ha?
Oh, it's horrible. It's desperate. She doesn't have... on WhatsApp, she has a phone that belongs to one of our cousins.
Okay.
I can't communicate with her through WhatsApp. It's only through direct phone calls on that number. It's not her own number. The first two days, I was sending messages and trying to call the last number that she had. Because when they were refugees, our phone was lost. She got another phone. I mean, it's the story that everybody in... living in Gaza at the moment is experiencing. Difficulty of communication is a nightmare by itself. So finally we get to the number that we can call directly. I was just talking to her a couple of hours ago, just checking with her what's the update on Hamdi's situation and Adam. Alaa is probably the most resilient person I've ever met. We studied together. We studied together in college. We're both studied in Sudan.
Yeah.
We're Palestinian. We were born in Saudi Arabia, but we have Palestinian passport. We studied both together, myself and Alaa, in Sudan, in Nile Valley University. And she's the closest one of my siblings to me, because we spend the most time together, and between ourselves it's only 1 year. I'm 86, she's 87.
That's when you were born. Yeah.
Yes.
To go back to the children, in the sense that when you were talking to Alaa, obviously WhatsApp and the world we live in, have you managed video calls in the last few years? Have you been I'm sure the children were, they must have been in the background of the video call saying hello to their uncle.
The last video is probably two or 3 months ago.
Okay.
Herself, Hamdi, and the kids. Because with the internet, with the weak signal that they have, you can't really have good connection if you are to have a video call. But voice call, you have probably better chances and even more reliably, of course, text messages or maybe recorded voice notes. Sometimes the internet signal that they have might not be strong enough to support clear voice calls. You know? So it varies depending on the situation, the signal, the available signal, availability of electricity, and oftentimes, you just better throw that message, and whenever it suits them, they can read it, listen to it, or read it.
Yeah.
And but of course, whenever you talk to her, if she's at home, you will hear the noise of the kids.
Yeah.
It's a house full of joy, full of life. She will be giving instruction. Oh, Eve, please don't do that to Rakan. Oh, Yahya, look after Sidar. You know, lots of actions are in the background whenever you talk to her, of course. And most of our talks will be all about my kids, her kids, and I always ask her and actually try to learn from her. How can you look after 10?
Yeah.
I am barely able to manage with the two that I have. Like, you know, I have a daughter called, her name is Word, and my son is Adam. He's 5 months old. Myself and my wife are barely managing, you know, between looking after them at night. I have to go back to duty next day.
Yeah.
We are both sleep deprived, and we try to look after them, look after the house, and we're barely managing. How is she managing to look after them? I have asked her that question many times, but I don't know, in the most humble and how should I say? She simplifies it as if it is not a big deal somehow, because she's resilient, and she looks at I don't know how to say it. She told me, believe it or not, when your oldest become maybe 4 or 5, or even older, the older your oldest become, the more you can rely on them on him in terms of looking after the young ones. So Yahya was always looking after the infants, holding them, changing their diapers, feeding them with bottles. Hala will express milk while she's in duty, and when she returns back, she will give them the. Oh my God, Hala! I remembered when Hala was talking about the last bottle of breast milk she expressed.
And the you know,
I mean, so she gives that to Yahya. Yahya looks after the infants, and you know, you have, when you have 10 kids, there will be different personalities.
Yeah.
Rakan will always be with Eve, and you know, Lokman will be with Sadeen, or you know, they will have their own mates among themselves.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And as you know, so many from your work in Sligo now, it doesn't happen. That often now, though, still, we are well used to big families here in Ireland and all the incredible.
Oh, you think so, but not.
No, but the lively interaction and the love and the alliances and the messing and the.
Listen, we're all human beings at the same. We all have our passion, our dreams. We have our kids that we love and nourish and look after. We're not different. And we're all the same.
And Dr. Al, there's been so much loss. Do you feel the world is, and we're getting it through your human story, but do you feel the world is truly seeing the reality on the ground, especially for families like yours?
Listen, we have to give accreditation, we have to give credits to all the good souls in this world. There are plenty of courage voices. Starting from the Jewish community itself, lots of Jews have been pointing toward what's happening and looking at the Palestinian lives as lives of equivalent human being. Like, let's say, the voices of Gideon Levy, for example, Ilan Pappe, Maxwell Blumenthal, many others. When I hear them, especially among Israeli themselves, that they are appreciating the suffer that we go through, although those are minority, but having those voices give me hope in this world that one day this nightmare will end, because there are still good souls and good people in this world. I've been deeply touched by the support that I've received in Ireland here. Whenever I'm opening a conversation with a patient, they will notice the different accent, of course. And of course, you will be asked where you're from, Ali. And the moment they hear Palestine, they will all, not a single person haven't shown me empathy and support. I follow the media, I read the news, and I see regularly videos of huge protests across the world. Obviously, a lot of work
an effort has been done already, but then you ask yourself, is it, why is it not enough to end this nightmare?
Yeah.
I mean, at the level of the street, I've felt the pulse of the street. But at the level of governments, why are we not doing enough? Why we are not imposing enough pressure to stop this madness? There are no enough actions, unfortunately, to change this reality. And I haven't felt that we, as humanity overall, have we done enough in order to make sure that what's going on in Gaza is not going to be repeated again? Like, how have we normalized? I mean, as healthcare workers, how did we normalize what happened to Al-Shifa Hospital? How did we normalize with what happened in every single hospital in Gaza Strip? Doctors being targeted, paramedics being targeted and killed in cold blood, being taken as hostages. I wouldn't call it, they are not prisoners. Those are hostages. They have been taken. They haven't been given human rights. They have no lawyers to defend them, and they are left to be tortured in Sidet Heman and other camps and torture camps in the occupied land. How did we normalize all of that? Why is it normal to celebrate the explosion of the largest water reservoir in Rafah? Why is that normal? How did we remain silent on that? If we, the moment we have not taken action on the first strike on Al Ahli Hospital, if you remember, in the first during the initial phase of the war, when Al Ma'madani Hospital, Al Ahli Hospital, was bombed. I knew when I saw the reaction of the world in myself, I thought, oh, please God, this has, I hope I'm wrong, but all the other hospitals will be targeted the same because we haven't done anything to prevent it from happening again. And it keeps happening again and again and again and again and multiple times, not only one time, to the same place. In Nasser Hospital, where Hamdi and Adam are inpatient at the moment, that hospital has been targeted countless times.
And Dr. Hadi, when you mentioned, and I'm going to, with your permission, take a break in a few minutes and ask you to stay with us, but I feel that you're getting, even within this sense of this interview, stronger and stronger, and it's a most powerful contribution. Mm-hmm. But when you said the word hostage, a lot of people will immediately go back to October the 7th, 2023, and the hostages that Hamas took.
I obviously don't agree with what happened. Like, I can understand why you might take soldiers as hostages, but what happened to Pepa's family, I don't agree with. Why would you take those kids and families? Yes, I know that we have plenty of kids as well under the age of 18 being taken as hostages on the Israeli side, and we have plenty of women as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not justify what has been done. If you are going to do the same as what they are doing, you are not different than them. I don't agree with that. It doesn't satisfy me at all. Taking women and children as hostages, I don't agree with. Thank God there wasn't too many of them. And what happened is, I don't know if...
And I don't. And I'm very conscious, Doctor, that the burden and the personal burden that's on your shoulders, I should not add to that burden by asking you to necessarily have a view on other different organisations. You've enough burdens and enough pain to be going through.
Yes.
Please stay with us. I want to, I think our listeners, hopefully will stay with us, and I hope, and I know, I hope you can stay with us as we take a quick breath and collect our thoughts in what is a most, as I said, unspeakable, beyond words, one of so many tragedies.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie and 51551 is our text number. We're talking to Dr. Ali Al-Najjar, and he's the brother of Allah, who, even in the horrors of the world that we live in, their story has been front and centre to a lot of national and international newspapers in the last week, because last Friday, Allah and Han, her husband, nine of her children, Yaha, Rakan, Ruslan, Yubran, Eve, Raval, Sadim, Lukman, Sidra, and Sidra was predeceased by her twin, Sidar. They were killed when an Israeli missile hit where they were living. What? Okay, if with your permission, Dr. Ali, I want to bring in one of your colleagues who's contacted us like so many people. Jer, good afternoon.
Oh, Jer.
Good afternoon, Joe. Hello, Ali.
Hi, Jer. How you doing?
I'm okay.
You work directly beside Ali.
Yes, alongside Ali. We have the great privilege of working beside this great man.
And how did you find...
I suppose, Ali, Joe, how I found out
was working beside you.
Yeah.
Well, I was sitting in the car park after a GA game, mm-hmm. and I looked at my WhatsApp, and Ali had sent me the headline of the tragedy, and he said, "Jerry, not how I expected my sister to be trending on social media."
Oh, God.
It was just shocking, and I suppose Ali is held in such huge regard in Sligo University Hospital. He's worked in different disciplines. The whole hospital knows him.
Mm-hmm.
And this has brought the hospital to its knees. The grief is just palpable from all of us, because we're so much in solidarity with Ali and his sister and brother-in-law and little Adam. And we just all feel so helpless. Yeah. And I suppose because Ali is away on an unplanned trip,
mm-hmm.
we're feeling so helpless.
Yeah.
Because everybody, but we all have such respect for Ali.
And I know when you say, Ger, the hospital is on its knees. I suspect, and I know from even the way you're saying it, it goes way beyond this. This awful, awful series of
it's
unending.
It's awful, And I suppose the other thing I really want to say is that myself and Ali work in cancer services.
Okay.
And for the last while, it's been enormous for Ali to be able to work. But never once would anyone know there was anything going on in his life and anything to this enormity. And while he couldn't do anything for his own family, he's minding every family in Sligo. He's just an amazing doctor, and even so many patients are reaching out, so devastated for him. It's a horrible situation, Ali. It's your biggest fear manifested, I suppose,
of course,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's what I was hoping that
about.
I will never read when I look at my phone each time, but unfortunately...
Yeah, the time came, unfortunately. Yeah.
And Dr. Ali, stay with us, Jer, please. 51551 is our text number. Dr. Ali, did Allah and her family, her husband, did they ever think of or could they flee? Could they leave Gaza?
Well,
To be honest, what happened is, like, during the first ceasefire, my mother and four of my siblings managed to get out to Egypt, and they're still there in Egypt. We're trying to convince Allah to go out if she could have the opportunity, especially that Allah she's Palestinian, and she also, because her husband he also has the Egyptian nationality, that could help him to go out to Egypt even a bit easier compared to someone else. But their point of view, I mean, Allah was reluctant between the two sides, but her husband and herself finally came out to a conclusion. Listen, if everybody left Gaza, who will stay there and look after them? You know, if everybody who's educated or if they have the opportunity to get out, if they did go out, who will look after the poor ones there in Gaza?
Yeah.
Is that the message that we are trying to deliver to them? That we don't care, we'll just manage, everybody will care about himself and just leave? I mean, it's the hardest decision that you are going to take, because you look at your kids and you say, what guilt do they have in order to be in the middle of this madness, you know? Yeah. You would like to save them, of course. We're trying to convince them, just for your poor, for your innocent ones, just get out. But of course, we are afraid on her. We are worried on her, and we don't want harm to be inflicted on them. But of course, my heart is broken for every single soul there in Gaza.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if you are to do that, you feel that you are betraying your own people. And it's hard. It's the hardest position you could ever be in. To cut long story short, their decision was, we are staying where we are.
Yeah.
We haven't done anything wrong to flee. It's our home. It's our land. We have the right to look after our people. As doctors, we will keep providing. One of her words that she mentioned to me, like, when I am the victim, I'm not going to be afraid, because my ultimate worry is what will happen to me in the afterlife, you know?
Yeah.
If I am killed as a victim, I consider myself as a lucky person.
Mm-hmm.
But the one who is unlucky is the one on the other side who is killing the others, who is going to receive his treatment, as we believe, in the judgment day, on the day of judgment, in the afterlife.
Yeah. And Geraldine, I'm sure Geraldine.
This is her belief. This is her decision. At the end, she decided not to flee. And I completely respect that. And I thought I will never open that subject with you again.
Yeah.
I support you with whatever you want to do, and whatever I can do to facilitate whatever you decide for, I'm here for you. That's all what I can provide as a brother.
And Geraldine, I'm sure you, as a medic, appreciate that you feel that your place, and as you praise Dr. Ali,
that's what our training tells us is to look after the people who need us. And and I'm not a bit surprised that Allah has taken this perspective, because Ali himself is the very same.
Is he?
So they're all cut from the same cloth, Joe.
He's younger than myself, but he's way much wiser than myself.
I doubt that now, but Ali.
And Dr. Ali, And Dr. Ali, how long have you been in Sligo Hospital, University?
I have been in Sligo Hospital since January 2020.
Okay.
I started in Ireland in Letterkenny in August 2018.
Okay. Stay with us, Geraldine. I feel like, obviously, I'll say it to Dr. Ali again and again, condolences, but I also say to you, his colleagues and friends in Sligo, deepest sympathy as well to the pain and the grief that you must be suffering on such unspeakable. of so many unspeakable tragedies. Geraldine, thank you so much for contacting us. Evelyn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What would you like to say, Evelyn?
I would just like to say to Ali that I too send my condolences to him.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your kind words. Thank you very much.
And I do not have computers, TVs, or anything, so I'm not seeing this war visually.
Yeah.
I'm listening to the radio stations, reading newspapers, and I'm quite horrified by it. And the day this war broke out, and the invasion in Israel and the girls being raped, I found horrific, absolutely horrific, that girls were being raped and their brains blown out as they were being raped. Absolutely horrific. And I would be very curious to know what the Palestinian people think of Hamas, who have brought them into this war.
And then there's again before that, Evelyn. We then go back into the whole history, and I think that in fairness, Dr. Ali has already said he's horrified by the hostage taking. But again, we then get into this. What way did Bono describe it last week in his interview with Brendan O'Connor? This competitive empathy.
But to that, I have to say. Yes, I of course sympathize with every innocent life being lost on every side. I don't feel happy about what happened to the Israeli hostages, or any of the innocent life that has been lost there.
Yeah.
There is a generation that has been born there in Israel, and they don't know any other country than Israel,
yeah.
And those who live there peacefully and not harming anyone, I don't justify their killing indiscriminately. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But what I don't agree with for my own people, I also apply the same
yes.
on everyone.
Yes. Yes.
Killing kids and elderlies will never be justifiable. Will never. And I do differentiate between who are Jews and Zionists.
Mm.
Zionism is completely different than Judaism.
Mm.
I have no problem with Jews. Jews have been living with us in the Arabic world for more than 1,400 years with peace, with respect, with cooperation, collaboration. Anti-Semitism is not a problem that has started in the Arabic world. We're actually the ones who hugged them and brought them to safety when they were massacred in Spain. They were protected by the Ottoman Empire. They went to Turkey to safety. Believe it or not, Iran has the largest community of Jews other than Israel. And they are prosperous and safe.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitism isn't a problem that the Middle East had. It's a problem that has been projected to that part of the world. To justify, I don't know, there are plenty of.
The line might be fading there, but I'm.
I want to go into yeah. too much in politics.
Yeah.
I
understand
I'm
that.
I'm not satisfied to this level, but I wanted to say that.
Yeah,
I do differentiate between Judaism and
okay.
Zionism. I don't agree with occupation. If you have been there 3,000 years ago, you are more than welcome to return back, but not kicking me out of my own home.
Okay.
There is empty land beside me. You are more than welcome to live into it. But that does not justify evacuating someone's home forcefully. You know,
and I'm very
we can talk,
yeah.
we can solve those problems. The problem is brainwashing at
yeah.
a large scale, systematically, in the Israeli community and on our side as well.
Okay.
We do have people to be blamed about not differentiating between People who indiscriminately bomb themselves among Israeli. I don't agree with that.
Of course.
You have military basement. The Israeli army is occupying our land. They are seizing our land. If you want to break a war with them, you know where the military base, you can target it.
Yeah.
I don't agree with indiscriminate targeting and killing for innocent people, regardless of who is doing it and against whom.
And I go back to what you said right at the outset, nearly 1 hour ago, Dr. Ali, I'm thinking of the the Rakans, the Ruslans, the Ubrans, the Eves, the Ravals, the Sadims, the Lukmans, the Sidras and Sidar, who predeceased her siblings. I'm thinking of all those countless innocent souls. And it's very important, and I thank you to remind us of them. Dr. Ali, I'm asking you if you would stay with us, because a few more people want to offer their sympathy and condolences.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking to Dr. Ali Al-Najjar, whose 9 nieces and nephews were killed in a strike by the Israeli army last Friday. And apart from that unspeakable horror, one of the reasons it has generated, even in this world of awful noise that we live in, generated so much international attention, is that Dr. Ala, who is Ali's sister, is a paediatrician. She survived. She was actually working in the hospital when her family home and the children were in the basement with the father. The father survived and Adam survived. Antoinette Dickinson, good afternoon. You want to share some words with Dr. Ali?
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe, and good afternoon to everybody there too. I would just like to offer Dr. Ali Najjar my deepest sympathies. I think that it's dreadful what has happened and what is happening currently.
Mm-hmm.
And without going into politics or anything like that, I just think the whole situation seems to have spiraled out of control.
Yeah.
And it's almost like one side is trying to exterminate the other, because of whatever belief they have, and it's just terrible, you know. But when it comes down to the critical infrastructure being just bombed and destroyed for no reason, other than to prevent one side getting another aid into whatever side, you know, it's just gone crazy. And in our 21st century so-called enlightened world, what have we become that we're still doing this? And what's the mindset behind it?
And one of the things we've become, Antoinette, is powerless.
I think so.
Yes.
I think we have become powerless. And even with all of the social media and all of the you know, connectivity that we've got, there's also, I think, a desensitization because we're exposed to so many things that are online, that are on whatever form of media, whatever platform, that it's almost like, oh, it's not in my backyard.
And do
it's
we?
It's dreadful. Yeah. It's inhumane.
And Dr. Ali, would you feel that people have become desensitized?
I don't know. When you keep listening to the similar stories on a daily basis, I don't know. It seems that people became numb to it somehow. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably they did. Yeah. I don't know. It seems to be because, I can't generalize. Yeah, there are people who are still persistently showing up in marches or whatever activities they can participate at. There are still activists, journalists who are constantly shedding the light on this subject. But you would like to see it going forward to the next step. Let's take actions that can really put an end to it. And to be honest, the whole point of me sharing my voice here today is I hope that the tragedy that Allah had is going to be the last tragedy.
Yeah.
If what happened has happened for a reason, and if this reason is going
to be putting more pressure to end this war of injustice,
yeah,
and just end this nightmare. I'll never be satisfied with my nephews and nieces being lost, of course, but if it will bring an end to it, I'll be satisfied. Mm. I am not seeking revenge from anyone. I just want this madness to end. And that's all what I hope for.
Antoinette,
I wish no one else to get through what we have been getting through.
Yeah, I understand completely. I hear every word he's saying, and I'm my own husband is from the Southeast Asian area. He's from the north of India, but there would be this very much you sacrifice maybe somebody or a group of people for the greater good. Now that sounds crazy to us, but if you see where you're coming from, I do understand where Dr. Najjar is coming from. I also do think that it's gone down, it's really gone right down to the wire, where innocent people on both sides are suffering this nightmare. Children, elderly, it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're old or young, it's just their people. And everybody deserves to have a good quality of life. And not to have to wake up to bombs, not to have to wake up to your house down around your ears. I don't want to bring politics into it, but it is political at the same time, insofar as it's it's almost like a chess game, you know, where land is the the prize. Mm-hmm. And I strongly feel that all of the people in the Western world, like us, who we are very lucky and maybe very cushioned, that we don't realise because we can get up at the end of the day, we can get up, go out of our houses, get into our cars or into our public transport, such as it is in some places. But at the same time, we're free.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important basic human right, freedom. And I don't think these people have freedom anymore, and it's terrible.
And
it's terrible.
Doctor Antoinette, do you think what can Ireland do?
I think Dr. Najjar is right when he said that yes, there is a certain amount of desensitization or numbness, but that journalists do have this responsibility to let us all know. And I do think that good journalism, not this sensationalist journalism, and is good for us. But we need to, I suppose, maybe just be more aware, and I don't know how we can be more aware, and I don't really know how people can do something practically except maybe make their voices heard on platforms like yours and just not be afraid to voice their sympathy and not be afraid to maybe voice their opinion without going too much into it's tit for tat, it's right and wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong, or you're right, I'm wrong and you're right, you know, that kind of thing. maybe,
well, like, is this,
I suppose.
Dr. Ali, yes, come in. Ali.
I just wanted to add to her what she was saying. Sorry for interruption.
Antoinette,
we are allowed to disagree.
Yeah,
keep going, Antoinette. Sorry for interrupting you.
Not at all. And Dr. Ali, following on what Antoinette said there, what can Ireland do?
I think that finally the bill for cutting trade with the occupied territory is something that hopefully will take place maybe next week, I hear.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe if hopefully that will be maybe the beginning of a cascade of such a thing to expand more, maybe to more European countries or more countries around the world. Maybe if we isolated the regime of discrimination that is currently governing Israel. I mean, I don't want to apply harm to any Israeli innocent. Yes? But you would like to change the current system that is ruling there. I mean,
you probably all have heard Smotrich and Ben Gvir's comments. I don't think that we should tolerate such mentalities anymore. I mean, they completely call for the erasure of Gaza openly. I mean, they are very honest, and they don't feel shame about even publicly verbalizing it. And they clearly say their intention, Smotrich and Ben Gvir. Another extreme right wing. So probably if we are to apply more pressure on the Israeli government, hopefully it worked with South Africa. Yeah. Maybe if we did the same with Israel and isolated Israel economically, politically, accountability is probably number one in terms of what need to be done in order to, because my goal is for this not to happen again for anyone.
Okay. And without accountability. Yeah.
They feel that they have the impunity to do whatever they want. And they are clearly thinking that they are a different race. They are allowed to do whatever they want to do.
Whether it's for religious
reasons or other reasons that have been manipulated and been implemented or used to justify their actions.
And even when
they are really acting as such.
Even when they're allies,
we are all human beings. Yeah. There is no one superior than the other. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, I know you've said that so powerfully, Doctor Ali. What are your own plans now? Stay with us, hopefully, please, for the remainder of the program. But what are your own plans? You coming back to Sligo? Will you be able to come back in terms of what the tragedy that your family has suffered?
It is tragic. Well, of course, no, my plan hasn't changed.
Okay.
This will never break me.
Yeah.
Killing how many innocent people you can kill, it's a crime on your hand, but it will never break me to the level that will stop me providing and doing what I am doing, providing for my family, looking after other people who need to be looked after. That will never change in me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And
if that is changing me, I believe that Israel has the Israeli government have won. I won't allow them to win.
Okay.
And my victory is just to keep providing.
Okay.
I won't become victorious by doing equivalent amount of killing.
Yeah.
I think I will become victorious the more I become providing for life. Yeah. And you know what? This is why Hamdi has been targeted, because he's a doctor, Ali is a doctor. They were providing life and sustaining life in Gaza, and probably that's why they were targeted. And they are not the only doctors who were targeted. And unfortunately, in Gaza, that's your punishment if you are to support life in Gaza. Okay. Many people who were offering food for the needy ones have been targeted. If you are to reestablish plant nursery in order to replant the land and become resilient and grow your own food in Gaza, you are targeted. Many reports have been done on those people who were trying to reestablish their nurseries again and their farms. Anything that supports life in Gaza is being targeted, and this is probably the way how Israel has punished Allah, because they are trying to erase Gaza from the map. Anything that sustains life is probably against their will.
Okay. And a lot of
I am to surrender to their will and not provide, they probably will become victorious. I don't know, but I'll keep providing and doing what I'm doing.
And I'm thinking
they are not going to break my will.
Yeah, and I keep thinking.
And you know what?
Yeah.
The way how Israel is trying to break the will of the Palestinian people, you can't believe what Golda Meir has said. I don't know if you remember Golda Meir.
Of course
she was
the
prime minister in the 60s, 70s, in that era. Yeah. He said one day, "We will never forgive the Palestinian for forcing us to kill their children. That is how they punish us."
Okay.
You know, this has been declared publicly as the policy at the highest level.
Stay with it.
I'm not going to do the same. I'm here to support life. I'm not here to take revenge. I'll continue doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I hear that from the beginning of this interview, Dr. Ali, I hear that Hippocratic Oath coming out again and again and again. You don't want to do any harm. You don't want revenge. You want this to end. Please stay with us. So many of your friends want to offer their condolences to you because you are out of the country, understandably, at the moment.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, I'm talking to Dr. Ali Al-Najjar. A lot of people in Ireland know him because he's been here working as a medic since 2018, began up in Letterkenny, and subsequently, as you heard, because you heard some of his colleagues from Sligo, where he is deeply loved and deeply appreciated. But the reason, unfortunately, Ali is on the programme is that last Friday, Ali's sister, she lost 9 of her children. She's a paediatrician. She's also a medic. Both of them studied together in Sudan in another tragedy in Gaza and indeed beyond. And the children's names were Yaya, Rakan, Ruslan, Yubran, Eve, Raval, Sadim, Lukman, and Sidra. And Sidra was predeceased by her twin 3 months ago, Sidar. And we're thinking of all those names because those names you can multiply a thousandfold at this stage to represent the children for so many of us here, but not for their families. We don't know their names. Maybe if we know, if we learn the names of those 9 children, we will move closer, and others will move closer to the humanity that surely is in all of us. Bridie, good afternoon. You want to make a point? Go ahead, Bridie. Kerry.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Joe.
Right.
Yes, I want to sympathise, especially with the doctor and all of them, all doctors, all aviators. The whole lot of them out there that are working under terrible situations, they've lost families and everything. And I would ask our government, Joe, please stop the talking, just act. Bring out as many women and children as possible into Ireland. As some months back, one of Binnimin and Nahu's right-hand men said, go to Ireland or go to the desert. Ireland is here. Can we do it?
Yeah.
And we can. We've a small country, but we've big hearts. We'll be able to protect and save some of those women and children and families. So for God's sake, please put an end to the slaughter, that terrible, horrific thing that we watch day after day after day.
Yeah.
We have seen it in other countries. We have acted. We've seen this now. Can we please act?
And you're actually saying we should offer to bring
the children
if they
and the
wish,
women.
If
they wish to come, please bring them. You know, bring them out. Let there be another generation of Palestinians before they're wiped out.
Okay.
You know, it.
Bridie, stay with us because I know you did your own work in Bosnia, and I might try and talk to you before we finish. But Helen, sorry for holding you, Helen. Helen, you're listening to Dr. Ali.
No problem, Joe. I just ring in up to offer my condolences,
mm-hmm.
Dr. Mm-hmm. Ali and his family, and that the grief is felt nationwide.
I also
wanted to state that I don't feel desensitized. I feel powerless.
Yeah.
And, like, that's an awful shocking way to feel, that I'm so powerless not to be able to do anything to help these poor people, to watch these children being killed or starved to death. And without getting political, I just can't see what the great powers of the world, so-called great powers of the world, is anybody doing anything to genuinely really try and stop this?
Yeah.
I'm just at a loss, like, and just feel so powerless.
Which a lot of people do, Helen, as you say, and you've said it so clearly. Stay with us, Helen. Patrick is in Mayo. Patrick, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you? I'm actually on a train, so I think the line isn't great.
and I was just listening to the program, and I'm in tears on the train listening to this beautiful man, and I wanted to call and offer my condolences. And it's very powerful listen to the two women who spoke just before me as I was waiting, and the way they put it and the way Bridie said it, it's simple. You know, I think if you go back and listen to this man speaking about these horrors, it's a very simple, and if you can cut through the noise and just hear what he is saying.
Yeah.
And I really echo her plea to call on the powers, or people that have power, to act and to, as he said, is to end this madness.
Yeah.
And when your producer spoke to me, he asked, you know, my thoughts on it, and I'll just share really quickly. I live in a beautiful village in the west of Ireland. There's a community WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And I noticed that if anybody sends a text looking for a lift, looking for a lost dog, needing help in any form, people act. People run to act. And I think it's because they're allowed to hear the story directly. There is a person in need. Can I help them? And I think that the more we are let hear the story, like this beautiful man has been given space to speak today, and we're ringing to say we want to help, and we want our government and the people that have power to help.
Okay. Stay with us, and we'll take our final break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at rt.ie. Dr. Roddy, I know this is not the reason you're on, but is there a GoFundMe page? Is there any way people can help, people who feel powerless? Is there any way they can help?
Well, I was surprised with a message that I received from my colleagues in the hospital that they have launched a GoFundMe appraisal, and I didn't ask for anything.
I know that
to be done,
me.
But
yeah.
Themselves, they already have
and we
initiated that.
We'll put those details up, and people also know there's UNICEF, there's Medicine Sans Frontières, which is, and there's so many great, great organisations, and people who feel powerless. Oftentimes, that's the only way they can feel
and
in terms of difference.
In terms of help and what people can do, I asked Allah before just an hour before I came to Earth. I asked her, do you have anything specific, Allah, that you want to say or mention?
Okay.
She said, I only have three messages or three things that I am requesting if the world would allow me. She said, I only ask for the two left bodies under the rubble to be excavated and buried respectfully beside the rest of their brothers. That's Allah request number one.
Yeah.
Number two, keep praying for Hamdi and Adam.
Yeah.
For them to hopefully recover quickly, as quick as possible. And the third thing that she want to say is deep, deep thank you to everyone who have participated, who have commented, who prayed for them. All what she's asking for is your prayers for Hamdi and Adam to get better. And my request is just, hopefully this will be one of the events that will turn the point around and hopefully end this mad war.
And before I ask you to once again repeat the names of the, indeed the 10 children that have died, just to remind people that Owen McLaughlin and the Owen McLaughlin produced with Lee Mullen on sound, and Ray Darcy will be up after this. Would you please, before we have some silence, which is only appropriate at the end of this programme, would you please give us the names again of your nieces and nephews, because they represent countless thousands, and God rest their innocent souls. If you would do that for us, Dr. Ali, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'll start from the oldest to the youngest.
Yeah.
Yahya, Adam, Rakan, Eve, Jubran, Raslan, Rival, Sadin, Luqman, Sidra, and Sidar.